Welcome to Brain Junk. It's the last week of Thanksgiving break. Trace here. And this week, oh, we've got some good ones. Episode 108, White Bellbird and his 125 decibels of love. And then we're going to move into episode 202 with Amy talking about the honeypot ants, ants with the biggest butts in the ant kingdom. And then wrapping it all up, 125, Animal Odd Fellows. We've got frogs and tarantulas, blind snakes and owls. This is everything I love about animal factology. And don't forget, next week, December, how is it already December? 1 month left in 2023. We will be back with brand new episodes. We've got magnets and how they work. We've got cat allergies, jamais vu, all sorts of fun stuff. So sit back and enjoy our audio buffet of animal facts.
Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Amy Barton.
And I'm Trace Kerr. And it's time for a brainstorm. So we have the Guardian Australia's Instagram account to thank for this brainstorm. Excellent. I was looking very late one night and the volume was accidentally on. And I discovered the white bellbird.
The white bellbird.
Yes. So it's okay. This funny little bird. It's about 7 inches or so from beak to tail. It's got this weird wormy wattle hanging down next to its beak.
Mm-hmm.
And all white bellbirds can be found in northern Brazil and southern Venezuela in the Amazonian cloud forests.
A lot of weird things happen in the jungle.
A lot of stuff, especially the way it sounds.
Okay. That sounds like some sort of crazy European emergency sound.
Like
that
is a weird
animal?
Car alarm?
It's a bird? Yeah.
Yeah, it is a bird. And you can find videos. I'm going to have a link in the show notes. This little bird doesn't look like it's doing anything, but the way that beak opens and then the neck goes.
I would be looking around thinking, we've entered a dystopian youth novel. We're going to come across a compound soon. It's lunchtime. That's crazy.
Or you're looking for your car and you're like, yes. Beep, boop, you know, that kind of thing. Well, okay, so now imagine you're a female bellbird and you've heard the fellow shouting in the forest because he's looking for a lady, right?
Oh,
and
does
you
it
land.
Get better?
Well, you land pretty close to check him out.
Mm-hmm.
And that song that I played, that's mm-hmm. at about 60 decibels that he's doing.
That's decently loud, right?
Okay, well, let's go back and break it down. So a library is about 40 decibels.
Okay.
3 feet from a speaker at a club is about 100.
Okay.
At 125 to 130, it's super painful to a human being and can cause damage. If you're a female bellbird, you land close to this guy, he faces you and hits you point blank with 125 decibels.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that sound.
Uh-huh.
Right in your face.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. The Italian Job where Seth Green's character wants to buy a stereo so loud it blows the lady's clothes off. But that is the bird version.
That is the bird version. He's blowing her feathers right off.
Yes. So we'll have to promo social media with that, a quote.
They like loud males.
Maybe it makes their whole body buzz.
I know. They're like, woo, it's so great.
Yeah, because you do kind of buzz with that kind of volume.
Yeah. You know, they're in a cloud forest. So mm-hmm. it's thick rainforest. You need that volume to be heard.
Yeah.
But then the fact that when the female comes, they're that much louder. The females have selected
okay.
the loudest boys.
Wow. All right, ladies.
Should we listen to it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. I can't believe a bird can make that sound. It's kind of metallic, which
yeah.
is.
Yeah. The first time I heard it, it was about 11:30 at night, and I had the volume cranked up all the way. So I guess I was like a female white bellbird, and it did not attract me at all.
No.
And Chaz about levitated out of bed.
Oh, were you in the bedroom?
Oh, yeah.
Whoops.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, shove it under the pillow.
And
he's just in there shouting away, that little bird.
And just in case there's dog sounds in the episode, Brain Junkies, I have a dog. His name is Hank. He's a hound dog. I think he's like 80 pounds right now. He's got a few pounds to lose. He's got a very thumpy tail and he's upstairs. So if you hear thumps in this episode, please know that Hank is having a very good time. Okay, Trace,
Yes.
I bet you think we've talked about everything there is to say about ants, right?
You know, I always think so. Ants and spiders, I'm like, we've exhausted it. And then... Yeah.
Ants and spiders and rats. We were talking about how we need a jingle. It's Ant Chat with Trace and Amy. So that's today. It's Ant Chat with Trace and Amy.
All right, bring it on.
I would like to talk about honeypot ants.
We
know the lore of the resourceful ant. They go to extreme measures to care for the colony, including removing themselves from the colony if they're sick and protecting the colony through giving up their own life. And so there's many things in place already in many ant communities that protect the whole.
Right.
I'm going to try to say a science word, everybody. Yep. Myrmecocystis mexicanus is the honeypot ant. So let's just say honeypot ant.
I like that.
These guys are deserty. They live in arid climates. So I got excited because our area is somewhat arid, but we have some serious winters. They are more indigenous to the southern United States and Mexico. So you probably won't find them up here in the Northwest, but you go down south and you could find some in the Southwest. And they are colonies that have a specialized honey ant that is called a replete. And so these guys spend their whole lives hanging from the roof of the nests that are dug in the deep, cool ground. And during the rainy season, their fellow ants spend time feeding them, dropping little bits of nectar into their mouth like they're some sort of godlike creature. This is their whole life. They hang there and they eat and they eat and they store this food. So the main source of these ants and these repletes is the sweet nectars gathered from desert flowers. However, I do love that they also will feed the repletes liquids from insects killed by the colony. So like body fat from wasps or other ants. So these are cannibal ants.
Oh my God. Sometimes,
but still cool. So they get too big to move, and so they literally spend their whole life just hanging there. But the pro of that is that then with those big bloated bellies, they have these living larders, so that when it's the dry season and these guys have swollen to the size of a grape, their neighbor ants decide it's time, we can't survive, there's no other food for us. They go and they stroke their antenna. I'm stroking my antennas now, which are sort of where cat whiskers might be. You can imagine for yourself, stroke your own antenna. And they're like, oh, okay, dude. And they regurgitate some food for their neighbors.
Okay, so I went and looked at a picture and you said like a grape. This ant has the biggest back porch and it's giant and swollen and kind of honey colored. Like,
it's weird. It's kind of translucent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Move over, Kim Kardashian. These ants have all the boom and back.
That's right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're part of the worker caste, although that's sort of a royal existence. Maybe it's boring. I don't know if ants have boring.
I don't know if ants have boring. I mean, there was a cutaway of a log and they're gripping the log with their big butts hanging down.
Yeah. Like you hang them on the line and they're just hanging up there. I don't know how they hang. It didn't occur to me to look that up. I presume the little front claws are just clipped up there and that's
just
their life.
Just ripping on. Oh,
they've
my
got
gosh.
Like these tiny but heroic biceps. Some things we can just imagine.
Wow. But what an interesting adaptation.
Yeah. Strange. And if you want to, you can see David Attenborough eat one.
Oh, no. Because you know, they would pop just like a cherry tomato. And I hate everything about that.
I would be okay with it if it was like a cherry tomato, but I feel like it's a little too boil-like in its look. No, thank you. I've made it grosser. Did you think we could? I did.
You did.
I use science word, but I also made it gross. I just gave myself a high five.
Yuck.
So now you know, the honeypot ants.
Trauma. Okay, let me see.
I turned it from a really nice, we're surviving in adversity to, they're cannibals and they pop. It's gross.
Okay, so. So I am so excited to bring you an Animal Oddfellow doubleheader.
I'm so excited too. An animal odd fellow. Okay.
Yes.
I'm ready.
So we've talked about symbiosis before. That's a close relationship between two species where one might benefit, like your sloth and moth.
Yes, exactly.
Episode. Yep. So there's something called commensalism, where one species benefits and the other isn't harmed, and mutualism, that's where everybody wins.
Okay. So, like if everybody loaded the dishwasher.
Yes, right?
If you're sitting here thinking, I don't load the dishwasher, stop right now. Go do it and come back.
That's commensalism, and your mother hates you.
Yep.
Well, the first pair we're going to talk about are Texas blind snakes, which sounds like I made that up, but I didn't. And the Eastern screech owl in Central Texas.
Those are both wonderful names.
Right? So the Eastern screech owl builds nests inside a tree, like a hollow log and that kind of thing. And they usually have their, you know, chicks in the nest. Well, part of the problem that they run into is parasites. You know, you get bugs and things that are in there. They feed on the chicks, which isn't so great, and the chicks aren't as healthy. Mm. A study done by Baylor University, they were seeing when screech owls carry snakes to their nests, usually the snake is beheaded when they're going along. That's like they kill it. Yeah, they kill it by doing that. Chop, done, and then they take it to the nest. Well, F.R. Gelbach and R.S. Baldridge were seeing owls carrying live blind snakes to their nest. Now, a blind snake, it's nearly blind, and it only eats insects, and it's about 12 inches long. They're often mistaken for worms.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they look like a long, skinny noodle. So they were seeing these owls carrying them, and these worms are flopping around in ways that says, hey, that it's still all the worm that's there.
Yes.
Yeah. So they looked into nests, and they found four nests with live snakes in them. So these live snakes, these live snakes burrow under the dirt because they're in the duff. They're looking for insects, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, here's the cool thing. The live snakes, the ones that don't accidentally get eaten by the chicks, burrow.
No.
Yeah, I know. They burrow into the stuff underneath the chicks.
Uh-huh.
And they eat the insects that are in the nest.
Oh my gosh. It's like they completely were panicked because they're flying through the sky and they know their doom is coming. And then suddenly it's not. They have arrived at nirvana because they're warm underneath baby chick buns. And they're eating all day long. The food just drops down from heaven.
Oh, yeah. Because anything the chicks don't eat attracts insects, which they then eat.
Wow.
And so they thought, well, okay, this is crazy that this owl is doing this. Is there really any benefit? They followed the health of chicks in nests with live snakes versus ones that did not have live snakes where the live snake got snacked on. And the chicks with the snake in the nest were healthier and weighed more.
Wow. Do you think the mama owls, when the chicks ate the snake, this is why we can't have nice snakes, children.
I know, she comes back and she's like, I just brought two of them yesterday. Do you know how hard it is to find those things?
And catch them?
Yeah.
That whole process, to see an owl flying through the air with a moving snake and then knowing it's living there.
Oh. Yeah, it's just living out the rest of its life stuck in that nest with the owl chicks.
It will never have a family of its own, but it doesn't care.
No, because it's well fed. It's a nice fat blind noodle.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's living your best life.
It is living your best life, but I have somebody who's living an even better life.
I have a hard time imagining that, but dazzle.
Oh, I got to tell you, this is amazing. I want to tell you about the barely half inch long dotted humming frog.
That might be better.
That lives in Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru. It eats ants. That's its mojo. And some of these lucky frogs become the pets of burrowing tarantulas.
That is weirder.
I have to tell you that I don't like spiders. The way they move creeps me out. So watching videos for this was deeply disturbing, but it was so fascinating that I would sit there going, and still watch and take notes.
Yes. Yes.
So the spider has its nest, and the female lays her eggs in the nest. And ants really like spider eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So when this frog follows the ants into the spider's nest, the spider does not eat the frog. Now, the frogs do have slightly toxic skin, but it doesn't even kill the frog. And these tarantulas eat frogs.
So they're intentionally not eating this food because the food is contributing to the greater good.
Yes. And you will see the frog is hopping along and the spider touches it and caresses it. And you're my frog. Okay. And then the frog just lives in the nest. If the spider is out in the world and the frog is out in the world and, there might be a predator, the frog, will crawl under the spider. So the spider's just standing there and the frog is like, move your legs, crawls underneath and hides under the spider.
And the spider defends it. Why has this never been in a creepy animated movie?
It's terrifying.
I feel like Rapunzel's mother might have this situation at her house or some witch in some movie. They've missed opportunities. That is weird.
Yeah. And not only that, but when the tarantula babies hatch. Okay, now this frog is half an inch long, so eeny weeny. Okay.
Okay, so like the fingernail size maybe?
Yeah, it's super small. And a tarantula, these tarantulas are
These are rainforest size of a kiwi fruit.
Yeah, they are gigantic, right? And like if one came in my house, I would just give him the house keys and leave. That's how big they are, right? And
yes.
The baby tarantulas, so I found this picture. I'm not sure if I can post it, but you could definitely find it. The little frog and a pile of baby tarantulas. It's like a mountain of tarantula spider legs next to this.
Now I'm feeling Adam's family here. Like this is a found family situation.
It is very much a found family situation. And as they grow up, these tarantula babies will pick up the frog. They will touch it with their mouth. They will roll it around, but nobody eats the frog because, like I said, it's slightly toxic.
Wow. That is the cutest, most horrifying thing I've heard in a long time.
Right? Well, and let's just take it one step farther with scientists. Okay. This is in the category of scientists doing things where you're like, I know we needed to know that, but is this really how we needed to go about that?
Yeah. How did he pitch this grant?
Well, Okay. In one instance, a scientist took a frog that the spider would normally eat and took the skin of a dotted humming frog and stuck it on the prey frog.
Suddenly we're in the silence of the tarantulas.
I know, right?
Oh!
Put the lotion in the basket and sent the frog in, and he's wearing the humming frog sweater, and the tarantula checked him out and let him go unharmed.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to go with Men in Black as my analogy here. He's walking around in a brand new Edgar suit.
And the spider was like, well, it smells like my frog who used to watch over everything. But yeah. So
frog was gone for a while. Did you guys see the frog for a while?
I mean, he's a little bigger now, but he smells the same. So I think it's fine.
Oh my goodness. There are so many things about this. Like, I might dream about this tonight.
I know, right? So that is an example of mutualism. You know, everybody wins. Frog is protected. Frog has a bodyguard. Frog has lots of food. And the spider has her eggs protected.
And frog has this surrogate family when the babies come. So, okay, that is better than the snake's gig. There's some community happening.
Because if the snake sticks his head out, he will get eaten.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
So there's still some inherent danger to his situation.
Yes.
The food comes from the sky. Do not go up to the sky to find it.
Wait till it comes down to you.
Yeah. Wow. All right, you won. You did trump your first one. I'm extremely impressed. That's my
favorite animal story.
Yeah, mic drop.
Wow. And that is my very long animal brainstorm doubleheader.
I might not wait for show notes. I might go look for this on my own.
Oh, you absolutely should. Actually, if you just put in tarantula and frog on your Google images, you see things you never knew you needed to see.
All right, folks, don't forget to ask your smart speaker to play Brain Junk Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter as @MyBrainJunk. And, of course, we're on Facebook and Instagram as Brain Junk Podcast. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored. I feel like extra specially committed to that this time. I feel like Trace hit it out of the park on this one. That was not boring.
I was like, I'm going to bring your attention.
Yes. That was A-game material.